Welcome, everyone. This is Dave. Thanks for your promptness. I see how many people have arrived, and I appreciate all of your emails and responses to the questions. I saw an overwhelming number of questions and wishes about looking at specific outlines of steps and structure to work with clients, and especially about examples. So that's exactly what I'm going to do during this seminar. It's going to be about an entire example and a structure and a set of steps, and I'll explain it in just a moment. But it's a way to deconstruct the process of understanding a story in a systematic way of constructing a new one. And it's going to, I think, be helpful, and I'm going to give you an overview of it. So first, I'm going to respond to those of you who are here. If you'll manage the background noise by *6, mute. Unless you have a headset, and then keep the toggle switch off so that we can have a discussion, except when you're ready to talk. So questions or thoughts, your reactions so far to the first couple of seminars, and any questions or follow-up that you have. I'm interested in hearing from you and what your take on this has been. In response to a couple of questions, there may be more who have the question. The page that you got, the link that you got when you registered that had the outline and the work pages and all that, that's the page that has the playback of each of the seminars. It's an online playback. CTA does not allow the MP3 download, but it's a playback. It should be posted by noon the following day. So the first two are available there. They'll be available up to 30 days past the seminar, and past the last seminar. But I'm interested in thoughts or questions that you have, things that you'd like to talk about in terms of change or transition that we've discussed thus far that may need elaboration or amplification, or just to raise questions for you.
Hi, Dave. This is Am.
Welcome. Hey, thanks. Go ahead. Thanks for rescuing me from silence. Go ahead.
One of the things that impressed me last time was you talked about a coach being able to interrupt an old pattern. I'm looking back at my notes here, and I'm not catching everything, but the idea was that when you see someone doing the same thing over again, there are times when a coach can, in certain ways, interrupt that pattern and help them to shift off in a different direction in their thinking. And my question has to do with the place that I see this the most is the pattern that some people have of blaming other people for the things that aren't happening the way they want them to happen in their life.
Yes.
And I'm really curious about strategies and things that can be done in that moment to interrupt that pattern, or is that just too big a pattern to be able to interrupt?
I think that's very coachable, and I think this is one of the places that we earn our money, because the things that are easier are, well, somebody needs a strategy for something, so you create some strategies and goals, and you look at things. That's easy. That's what you both focus on. You're both, you know, in the bunker looking out and surveying the scenery, and it's easy. Now, where you really earn your money is where someone begins to activate an old attachment pattern or behavior pattern with you. And this is where it comes alive. This is the in vivo experience. The process becomes the focus. And that's where you need a working alliance to work with someone. You need to approach that in terms of a conversation by having a very specific and simple sentence or two, something that's not complicated, something that begins with an empathic appreciation of the frustration that someone has about that, and then to begin directly in a very simple and specific way to address that. You know, one way that I might respond to what you just said is, I understand how frustrating it is when people don't respond as you would like them to. Now, if we look at a principle and then a question, the principle is that we can only determine what we do. Our level, our circle of influence is what we can determine. And that usually ends at the level of our skin. Our circle of concern is what everybody else does, from the ozone layer to our partner, and how they respond, and how they might respond is an extension of our interest or our desire. Now, if we apply that here, what can you do that you can determine and put your energy to some place that you can be effective and not be frustrated? So I would begin with a principle and then look at an application of that, because they may be able to get it if it's objective enough as a principle, because they know they're frustrated. They know that other people aren't responding as an extension of their interest and their desire. And they would like it. Everybody would. We all would. You would. I would. I would love for my wife to respond as an extension of my interest and my desire. But so far, she's the only one in the world who, when I ask, may I coach you for a moment, has consistently said no. So we have to make adjustments and adjust our expectations. So then, as we resonate with their experience, and of course they're frustrated, but the assumption, the belief that has been unquestioned but is there creating behavior that's maladaptive, I would not use these words, behavior that's frustrating, is the assumption that somebody else needs to respond in the just right way. So if you look at the principle of putting your energy into what you can determine and letting go of everything that you can't determine, you'll be much more effective and much happier, because you can absolutely ensure ineffectiveness by assuming that somebody else needs to respond as an instrument of your desire. Now, that's the implicit contract in many relationships. If I just do all of these things right, if I take care of you, if I love you in the just right way, then you'll respond and then fill in blank. And that is a contract with one signator. And the other person inevitably does not. So you're in love with somebody, with how somebody may be, or the person somebody may be or become, or the story you'd like somebody to live into, and you keep trying, and it's frustrating. And inevitably, it's a belief system based on an old story and reversing an old story, but you're stuck in a pattern, so you have to come to create a new story. This is exactly the seven steps that we're going to be talking about today in the roadmap, the seven steps of how to deconstruct a process of understanding a story and a systematic way of constructing a new one. Now, does that begin to answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to wait and see what happens tonight and see if the rest of the pieces I have fill in.
Okay. What would you ideally like to come to know in order to feel more satisfied and more effective as a coach in terms of the question you ask?
I guess how to turn away from, how to help someone turn away from the blame game so that they are looking at their own circle of influence.
Okay.
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 Thank you.
And that's very legitimate, because the first step in the roadmap is to recognize ownership of a story, to recognize that you're writing the story, because you know, we think, well, of course people write, we all recognize that we're writing the story, but there are inevitably some aspects, some beliefs that are ghostwriting behaviors that we haven't owned. And that belief that I just highlighted is that someone else should respond as an extension of my interest and desire is a part of a story that's being written that will never be fulfilled. So that's part of a recognition too. So, you know, one question that you might ask, you know, well, I hear how frustrating that is. How is that assumption working? That's the Dr. Phil question. You know, how's that working for you? You know?
Yeah.
And inevitably, it ain't working. So, But the client needs to know and recognize that it's not working. Then you have a collaborative partner to be curious about why. See, every step that we take with the client, we want the client to be with us. We are not an objective observer. We do not want to speak in a way that a client perceives us as the authority or as a critic. And that's why I emphasize an empathic resonance, because when you make an empathic comment, you're speaking from inside the experience of the client. You're giving voice to what the client is perceiving and experiencing that they may not be able to put exactly in words like that, or they're doing everything to show you what it's like to be them so you get it. So if you say you get it, then you're on the same ground and you can go someplace new.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the first comment always needs to be an empathic resonance. If somebody's upset or if there's some situation going on, you want to be sure you understand it before you say you do, but you can always self-correct. So, you know, I think I understand, you know, so you can't speak more clearly than you think, but you want to get it so that you're on common ground. Then the client can explain it further, because otherwise they're still going to be convincing you that Larry is just a badass and he's not responding the way he ought to. He just needs to be doing this and everything would be okay. Well, let's come back to that. And because I think it's a great question and it's a fundamental technique of coaching. So let's be sure that we get that. So I'm going to go on lecture mode, because I want to allow some time at the end. I want to come back to see if I've answered your question, if you're clear about it, and if I raise some other questions with others of you. Okay, we're going to talk about roadmapping a new story. It's the acronym for the 7 steps that I mentioned. We're defined by the stories we tell ourselves. In coaching, we help clients assess, is your story empowering you or is it causing you to fall short? Basically a version of what we used to talk about, is it working? Is your story limiting in any area of your life? Most people are stuck because of the story they tell themselves, the one that came from 10 years ago, the one that focuses on problems to overcome or things that they want to happen and hasn't. Here's a question for you. What is the number one addiction that we have as humans? Think about it. The most common addiction that we have. Problems. Problems are the biggest addiction we have. They give us an effective focus. They allow us to escape our own fear. They cause us to get back to our comfort zone, which feels familiar and effective, to talk about the problems. Happiness is when your life conditions match your blueprint. Think about that. How you feel life should be. If you're unhappy, your life condition doesn't match your blueprint. So what's got to happen? For a different result, you got to change one or the other. To change long term, you're going to have to change the blueprint, the map that may simply be outdated in some areas. So let's look at how to change a blueprint. This is the roadmap for a new story. The acronym, ROADMAP, is the 7 steps to deconstruct the process of understanding a story in a systematic way of constructing a new one. The mind, brain, and behavior changes for whatever story the client is writing. Life, wellness, money, career, relationship. I'm going to present a brief overview of these 7 steps. This entire process, including the exercises and work pages to help a client address these changes and write a new story, are part of the licensed specialty certification New Life Story Wellness Coaches Training and the New Money Story Mentor Training. So I just want to condense and bring this to you now as an overview. I'm going to focus on, and I've included actually a sample of some of the exercises and work pages in the accompanying workbook to the seminar series from the curriculum for those 2 trainings. But I want to focus on a sample that I hope you'll find useful and a sample that fits with our topic about coaching change and transition. So we're going to employ the 7-step roadmap program to effectively facilitate significant change. And here are the seven steps. We're going to go through each of these and look at career change as an example to give you some tools for this. Recognize authorship of your story. Own your present story. Assess the storylines and the plot. Decide these four things: what to keep, to enhance, to let go, and to avoid. Map changes. Author new experiences. Create new experiences. And finally, program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. One way to think about this is to roadmap a new career story. Let's discuss this perspective of working with clients. We'll talk about a roadmap that can apply to change and transition. So to apply the roadmap, let's use the example of career transition. So step one, and each of you, if I'm guessing right, has gone through this or is in the process of going through this because you've made a career transition to become a professional coach. I did, you did, or you're in the process of it, or you're considering it, or at least changing to add this as a track or a perspective of what you do. Step one, recognize your present career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? I'm going to ask you the questions that you might think about with a client. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line. Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in your career story. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? Now, this is the most common thing that I see about career change. For example, if someone has only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, they don't have the information needed, in my view. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would have to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career to contrast it with their anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career. You know they're going to idealize a new career to start with. It's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling at 80%, for example, would be repeated in the new situation. So here's a question. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? Now, when I ask a client this, it's always still amazing to me. They always know immediately. They can immediately tell you a number. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to get back to you. They'll say 60% or 75%. Immediately they know. So if it's not 100%, explore why. That's your immediate coachable moment. Have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so that you can make an informed decision? Here's a brief story to illustrate. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, I was on the faculty at Baylor College of Medicine. I served as a little bit of time as a consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research. That's the place that Congresswoman Gabby came to more recently for her rehab. Working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence and adulthood, often as a result of an accident. Now, not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime disability. Instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. They did not need me to take away that choice or try to talk that choice out of them. I recommended that we work, and this is to each of the patients, I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now in emotional rehabilitation, to parallel the physical rehabilitation that we're doing. recognizing that it was at a different level since the onset of disability. Only by achieving their full potential at this new level could they make an informed choice about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision. In other words, I told them I was going to be with them no matter what. I worked with several hundred people over a period of 5 years. Thankfully, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new, though different, level of function. Step two, own your career story, especially your needs and ideals. Now, remember, we're talking about career story, but substitute any storyline here. Money, relationship, life story, any story, but we're focusing on career. Now, when I emphasize needs and ideals, be clear about your needs and ideals. There's an exercise in the work pages that I would recommend that each of you do to name your top three needs and your top three ideals. It's an exercise I use with almost every one of my new clients to get an idea of what their primary needs and primary ideals are so that we can both be clear as we look at goals and strategies so that all of them is going in the same direction. Because sometimes their needs and ideals really differ from their goals and their strategies, and they're at loggerheads. So one question, to be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with passion and experience. Because when your passion and experience combine, wonderful possibilities emerge. So a question here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something, or rarely both. Distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. Be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, you may need to align to recommit to your career. This is about the client. Keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, but she was addicted to the pursuit of perfection. That was her work ethic. More became a goal. More money, more work, more perfect. The story of the pursuit of money had become a substitute for other stories because it was something tangible, something you could light on and make sense of. The ideal of more, of course, lacked an endpoint, so her self-esteem could never be validated. If somebody wants to be perfect or wants more as a goal, those are two stories with no endpoint because you never get there. She had become exhausted from the perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, yet never quite getting there. Now, I'll return to her situation in just a moment to continue that. Step three. Assess your career story. Now, we talked before, a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain, a physical part of a neuronal network. A teacher can't simply present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from his student's brain. You can't just list three reasons an idea is wrong, expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural networks and pathways. You can't just tell somebody a better way to do something, and they suddenly embrace that. But change can occur as a process, not an event. It's an inside job. This step is to assess beliefs to see if they're limiting and to try out other beliefs. Some questions here. What's another way to look at this? How might your thoughts be limiting you? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there questions you're afraid to ask? At some level, you know what they are. Remember, denial is a powerful engagement, just as powerful as a secret. What do you really want? And what do you need to let go of? What is present? And what is missing in a current career? What information do you need in order to make an informed choice? Research new information regarding personal skills, abilities, aptitudes. So a couple of questions here. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? And secondly, what is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? And this is a question that I ask at a recent retreat for executives in transition called What's Next Exec. What is your unlived life? And that was the question out of 2.5 days that resonated most profoundly with them, because these are people successful by all world measures. But they each immediately, I ask them to immediately respond so I get a right brain, so I get an emotional response. Oh, the last blog, my current blog, is a brief little vignette about that. While you're there, you can sign up for it if you want to receive future ones. But it, you know, go to my website, mentorpath.com, and blog, and the last tab on the top right is blog, and it's a little story about unlived life. I think you'll enjoy it. Distinguish internal satisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness are often blamed on a job or a marriage. People want to change the obvious external cause, as we were talking with Ann, because job-related struggles are tangible. They're specific. You can externalize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or to pose a recognizable remedy. And if it's somebody else's fault, at least it's not mine. Then the supposed way to get rid of the problem is to leave it. A geographic cure, supposedly, which has never quite worked. Step 4, decide on a plan and how to make it work. You have to learn to develop yourself. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be a different plan than you've done for maybe the first decade or two or three or more. It means that you will examine again your fundamental strengths, your needs and ideals, and things are going to look different at each developmental phase in life. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized, no corporate structure or job to fit into and govern your day. You'll need to develop or cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others, and especially where you can make the greatest contribution. So a question here, and this is the coach, how would working with me get you where you want to be? To return to the client pursuing perfection, her medical practice was booming. She had 12 healthcare specialists working for her, yet she wasn't enjoying it or feeling fulfilled. She was making a huge amount of money, and she was only looking to the next task to do perfectly. I highlighted a pattern that I noticed. It seemed that as soon as she began enjoying her work, really getting immersed in it, she began procrastinating. She would put off completing work, which immediately restored that old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. She should be doing more. So she was creating the stall to make doing more make sense. When I pointed out this pattern, she recognized it. It prompted her insight. It was really a moment of insight. I could almost feel her brain lighting up in those three different places. She said, work always has needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty, like I should be working. So we began to look at reprogramming the notion of work and success and achievement. Now, one way to do that, create a vision. Create a vision of success at your specific goals. Include all sensory detail, all experiences of successfully arriving at your goal. Review it twice a day. Having a plan supersedes motivation and not feeling like doing something. For example, and this is one of my strategies because I hated marketing. For example, your plan is from every Monday from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, you work on your marketing. You may not feel like it. You may not be motivated, But if it's Monday at 3 o'clock, you stick to your plan. You don't have to be motivated or something. You just have to have a plan and do it. Step 5, map a new story. Where, when, how to begin. This is the bread and butter of what you guys know. SMART goals, initiatives, next best action. And navigate with the brain's error detection mechanism. The human brain creates patterns of connections in our ongoing search for meaning. These patterns, mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. Remember, discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. Our brains have an error detection mechanism located very close to the emotional center that says this isn't normal when we try something new. Also a reason that it doesn't work to suggest something to do or a directive to your client, because their error detection mechanism says it's going to say that ain't right. When our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic. Then we notice when something doesn't fit that predicted pattern. The error detection mechanism, the brain functions to compare input with what we expect. A mismatch creates a disruption in the expected order of things. So this is why it has to be a process gradually, internally, of change, not just a sudden new direction. Examples of how our error detection mechanism works. We notice differences more easily than confirmation. So it becomes easier to focus on the things we do wrong while struggling to list our strengths. If advice is unfamiliar or unwanted, or it sets off that error detection response, meaning that someone can reject an idea before consideration, placing another barrier to resist change, which is why telling a client what to do can trigger this. We focus on problems, and it energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. Bad news gets our attention for the same reason. If it bleeds, it leads. Look at the headlines of newspapers or the 5 o'clock news. Look at what happens when an accident happens on the freeway. It slows traffic because everybody's got to check it out. It activates the brain by activating the error detection mechanism. So that reads as a little bit of excitement, better than nothing. The mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context in our lives, such as stress in childhood, may no longer apply in our current situation. The hardwiring is not permanent and can be revised. Someone in one of my groups, and she gave me permission to use this, was talking about an immensely successful woman, was talking about at a certain point there was something she was doing now that was creating a kind of success phobia. She was, you know, wondering if she was an imposter and if she was really able to do this. And the first question I ask is, what is the age of that conversation? She knew immediately what I was asking her. How old does she feel when she triggers that state? She said, I feel 16. I said, the issue is not feeling adequate at your current age and in this situation. The question is, why are you sending a 16-year-old out to do this new venture that will require all the skill and all the success applied that you have been before? She said, that's absolutely accurate. The hardwiring is not permanent and can be revised. When change occurs in a systematic and consistent way, such as with collaborative, contingent conversations, it's exactly what we do as coaches, new connections are made in the brain. New maps are created. The brain's error detection mechanism can be used as part of a powerful internal navigation system. Now, here's some compelling research that validates the impact of having a specific goal. Now, it's not exactly the research from a white coat sterile medical laboratory, but it's kind of close. You ready? The image of a black housefly was etched into each urinal at the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. The theory was that while men may not pay attention to where they aim, if they have a specific target, a goal, they will focus more specifically. The theory of the originator, Odd Kaboom, proved correct. It reduced spillage by 80%. Choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions. we are susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are automatic, that may be unhealthy, uneconomical, even short-sighted. When we consider how people think, we can design environments of choice that make it easier for people to pick better options. An example, a good choice that only needs to be made once that can affect the rest of your life. Have an automatic retirement savings program set up that automatically deducts X amount of money from your checking account the first of every month from now on. It'll change your life. A good choice only once. Step six. Author changes. Implement the plan to reach your goal. Now, to author changes, to create changes here, someone needs the correct paradigm. This is something I don't think we talk quite enough about in coaching. Changing careers, to use our example here, changing careers means changing paradigms, contexts. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career. You just change the setting. Now, here's a specific example. If you go from head of HR at one mid-size oil company to another in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. This was a client of mine, a national company in the same city, oil-related, head of HR at one, huge opportunity at the new one because he got a lot. He thought it would be the same. The correct paradigm would be not only the process, but the content of the new career, as well as the process of change. The culture can be worlds apart between two seemingly very similar situations. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. For example, in making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My secretary would take the calls and put patients on the schedule on the waiting list. I had a hugely successful practice. Well, wrong for coaching. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into marketing until I finally found a way to make it fun. Remember the words of my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. I finally applied that to marketing. So a question here, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And step seven, program new experiences to then incorporate them into your identity. Both the change and the transition involve changing a core identity. Your identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself, what you're willing to consider, what you'll do, what you won't do. Identity is the set of beliefs that relate to who you believe you are as a person, what you can do, what you will and won't do. When changes don't last, someone has not changed their identity. When there's a shift in identity, it becomes permanent. Remember, the strongest force in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our identification of ourselves, our identity. Not what I do, but who I am. We stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. So, for successful and productive work, here are some principles related to career that I've come to see and wanted to conclude this part with. Time is not an adequate measure of hard work. Hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. A work ethic is not the same as a productivity or a success ethic. If possible, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well. Time management is energy management. Stress regulation is energy management. Follow your passion. Know your optimum state of mind, your zone to accomplish a specific task, and the state of mind and the task need to be matched. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind for a particular task. How to get to your zone. When your passion and your expertise combine, deciding possibility occurs. Structure gives you freedom. And finally, if you're thinking of retiring or have a client who who's consider retirement as a new career. What is its mission and purpose? The business plan. The difference your wisdom will make in this new career. Finally, consider the possibility when you reach a point in your life that you can celebrate the freedom to work rather than the freedom from work. That's success. Now, let's review operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded, especially from parents, in the early years of life become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. Neuroscientists have examined and estimate now that 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind. They operate on autopilot. We observe only the behavioral derivatives of these, the attachment and behavior patterns, the ways that people work and relate. Then, what this means is we can create two stories simultaneously that go in opposite directions. So we're continuing the story metaphor here and looking at what someone creates consciously, the surface story, and what the shadow story may be that goes in the opposite direction. An example, the surface story. I want to create wealth. The shadow story, though, that can ghostwrite behavior or create a glass ceiling, well, I don't believe I can make really big money, or I don't think I have what it takes. Another example, the surface story. I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. The unstated or the shadow story, I can't have total authority because my husband acts like I'm taking it away from him. Mentoring requires us to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. Considerations of a career need to be considered in connection and conjunction with the developmental phases of the individual within that career, as well as where the individual is in life development. Needs and ideals need to be considered in terms of life phase. I'd suggest that each of you do your own needs and ideals from those exercises. The developmental issues more in the foreground of a certain life phase may determine how someone views a career, the challenges, or the desire to change careers. So, an ongoing assessment. Once a plan is put into action, we need to do four things. Monitor your choices, question your ideas, probe your reasoning, and ask clearly and honestly, does it work? Now, a mentor coaching application. Here's how we can translate that into mentor coaching. Challenge your mindset. For example, see every task as an improvable skill and how you can get better than just getting it done. Approach work with new perspectives. Think more simply, more abstractly, more deeply, more synthetically. Think long term. The place of your work in a system, not as a job. Get feedback from other sources, multiple sources, including outside your field. And do these approaches consistently. It's what distinguishes the super achievers. There are a couple of things I want to dictate for you so that I can send them to you for you to reflect on them, because I want to be sure that we talk about the last 12 principles on the seminar. So I'm going to dictate and send a couple of things to you about engineering effectiveness and about the destination postcard. So I'll dictate that and send it to you probably sometime tomorrow. So the triple A principles of change to author a transition story, and the three principles: awareness, acceptance, and action. And this is in your outline. Number one. You're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of these storylines with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. A simple yes or no. A not so secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is. Pay it in full, pay pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether the energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you'll still have to pay in some way. Another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this, and I believe it will really make a difference in your lives and to your clients. That makes it easy to pay, and it doesn't even seem like paying. It's fun. It's creative. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate the experience that you want. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Think about it. Positive or negative, based on present, past, or future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy. You give it power. It's your story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do have. Now, here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. Remember that you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of that. Here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent, remember a travel agent back from the days before internet and online booking. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Where and when? A goal is like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go. You make a map and determine the time. A caveat, to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And what you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's kind of like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. They're both attachments, powerful attachments. An example of this principle, it sort of is, but I just still like the quote. Paul Conrad, political cartoonist, said of Charles Coughlin, a 1940s radio preacher, "I knew that anybody who had to holler that loud could not be right." If you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial will be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? In a Harvard study began in the mid-1950s, 10-15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had a vision and specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, that 10-15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group, Harvard Business. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific goal and strategy. Now, it's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when, the travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by March 30th, 2014. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $300 to my retirement fund from my checking account the first day of each month. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap. Getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now you're going to have to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. Five, you're writing your own story, Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to make progress. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. I'll tell you a brief story about this at the end if we have time. You're writing your own story. Be consistent about the pursuit of goals. It usually takes a minimum of 25 to 30 days for a simple behavior response pattern for a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. Write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, Malcolm Gladwell tells us in Outliers, is about 10,000 hours of dedicated work to develop mastery. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. It was Albert Einstein. 7. You're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. The caveat here, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write a new script for new experiences, for a new story to replace the old one. There aren't any shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. That's exactly what someone is willing to pay you for, to help them solve or address issues or problems or challenges they have not been able to do or get to by themselves. 8. You're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. If your spouse or your partner, say, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. Or to your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, how do I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Bemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village stops. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. Now, a sidebar here. You may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story began the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A covers the last 3, mapping change and authoring new experience in 12 action steps, and remembering to change identity along with it, the model, your working model of yourself. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance. Instead of waiting for good luck, luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say, my favorite definition, narcissism meets chance. A review of research on goal setting, now this is in the work pages of your outline, help us understand 2 essential elements, why people give up on goals and how effective goal setting can ensure long-term achievement. Review those 6 most important reasons people give up on goals, because the inverse is success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor, just out of professional school, wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And 3rd, which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month of his practice, he took in $72,500, and in his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beyond was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. When the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this, so when the other runners were sleeping, he kept shuffling along. They were all asleep and couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to keep running. He shuffled along for over 3 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theories in the 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity, which can be described eventually using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. Okay, we had just a couple of minutes. I thought we'd have longer. My apologies. Questions or clarifications or thoughts about what we've talked about? One story that I wanted to mention in terms of looking at engineering effectiveness, to focus, one of the principles is to focus specifically on the next step. And you know we do that as coaches. Somebody's overwhelmed, looking at the big picture, we want to help them focus on the next step. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. He had an artificial leg, so his running style was sort of a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. Immediately after the race, he was interviewed and asked how, when he was exhausted, when he had thousands of miles ahead, how did he keep going? He said, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. So we want to focus on the next step, specify the next step, not abstract or too global. Some is not a number, soon is not a time, act healthy is not a strategy. But to specify what it is, make it tangible and concrete. I'll send you some material in an attachment on this. We have just a minute or two. Questions or comments?
Great story, Dave.
Thank you. Good.
I like your stories. They're very effective.
One of my initial mentors was a storytelling mentor when I made my transition from psychoanalysis to mentor coaching. And he said, you know, I value the effect of a story. In fact, one time I was stopped in an airport in Chicago, and a woman approached me and said, I really enjoyed a presentation you gave 4 years ago. And he said, would you remind me what I talked about? And she said, oh, I don't remember what you talked about, but I'll always remember that story you told. Stories are how we understand, how we remember, how we synthesize and integrate, and really put together and make sense of things. So that's how I think the metaphor of creating a new story and really understanding the principles of story and the roadmap or the steps of deconstructing a story and creating a new one applied to mind, brain, and behavior can be very powerful. So I'm glad it's helpful and useful for you, and that's really why I'm using that, because that's how we understand and make sense of things and remember things. So if there are questions, jot them down, and we'll begin here next week, or send them to me in an email, and I look forward to picking up with you again, and I'll send you a supplement to what we talked about. So thanks very, very much. I appreciate your interest and your energy. Bye now. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
My privilege.
Bye-bye.